It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Having a delightful summer.
Me too. I can't believe it's August already.
Kind of heartbreaking for those of us in academia.
Oh, that's right. You got to get back. What classes are you teaching come fall semester?
I'm actually taking a leave this fall to explore more clinical work. So if you need a therapist in the Albany area who's not going to pathologize your cannabis, call Health Psychology Associates and ask for me.
Oh, please do. You know, that's something a lot of us, we ought to consider is, you know, people looking for mental health help that are cannabis consumers often run into clinicians that will just want to drop you right in that drug seeker bucket. What's it going to take to get some change that way, some more cannabis-friendly therapists?
Well, in fact, I've been trying to do this in the training here with our grad students and emphasizing negative consequences, not frequency of use. And it's at least sinking in on sort of the next generation of folks. But I'm noticing even in my practice, people are afraid that they're going to get sued, which I find just so comic, as if some cannabis user is going to run out and start giving hand jobs to raise money for a habit or something. It just makes no sense to me. So I'm eager to keep spreading the word as best I can.
Well, I got plenty of cannabis, if anyone's out there. All right, let's go to our studies. And if you got questions, we're watching the chat room as well, and we'll get your question into Dr. Mitch. But the first study I wanted to talk about, or I guess it's more findings having to do with the early cannabis trade routes across the Silk Road, and the news being that there's been weed dealers for 5,000 years.
I just love this, and I really love the way they, you know, go back and actually find the evidence. It looks like certainly industrial hemp is going back this far, and maybe some might dare to say, you know, even back 8,000 years. But then the pollen and the pressed resin and things like that, I mean, come on, that had to be used medicinally. So I love the thought that basically our current dispensary owners are part of a potentially 8,000-year tradition.
That's an amazing thing. 5,000-year-old dealers. They would have been 4,000-year-old dealers, but you know dealers, they're always late. You know, it takes... All right. This study that's going around, I'm so glad I got you on to talk about this one, because this is hitting, you know, CBS News, ABC News, the big mainstream media, a study on secondhand marijuana smoke, saying that it's deadlier than conventional tobacco secondhand smoke due to the way rats' blood vessels reacted. What can you tell us about this?
This is kind of upsetting that they're willing to jump this far based on rodent data, whereas if we'd found out marijuana was less deadly, this probably wouldn't have even been published. So they've got these poor rats in a really overdone secondhand smoke situation where, I mean, it sounds like they're lucky they can see into the cage. And yeah, the recovery time on that sort of how their veins are essentially reacting and staying pliable is markedly longer than it is with secondhand tobacco smoke, but this is a far cry from anything involving humans or human cardiovascular health. And we've got large epidemiological studies suggesting that this is not really an issue in humans. And so, yeah, definitely, you know, don't hop on the exercise bike right after you've been sitting in a hot box. But otherwise, there's really more smoke than fire here.
I was concerned about this because we've talked so many times about how firsthand cannabis smoke is so less harmful than the firsthand tobacco smoke. And it kind of vexes me to think, how could firsthand be safer but secondhand be more dangerous?
Oh, well, so it's actually on different measures. So this is artery and blood vessel flexibility performance, sort of how flexible do your blood vessels stay. And that one looks like cannabis is in second place. Mm. But as far as just overall safety, it's way better than tobacco smoke from a respiratory irritation situation and for carcinogens. So this is just a different dependent measure, so to speak. And yeah, what a surprise. Cannabis smoke isn't the greatest on something like this. But I feel like this is getting way overblown.
Yeah. And from a methodological standpoint, the thing that jumped out at me was a line that said something to the effect of, we exposed the rats to the same volume of secondhand cannabis smoke that you might experience in secondhand tobacco smoke. And I'm thinking, what room is there that has as much cannabis smoke in it, other than maybe Snoop Dogg's, you know, den, has as much cannabis smoke as a typical smoky tobacco room?
Well, somebody who's got a whole lot more money for cannabis than I do.
Yeah, I guess so. All right, let's go to this next study. A federal study that says medical marijuana laws calm cannabis fears. And I think they're referring to perception of risk. What does this tell us?
So this is intriguing, but a little circular. So what a surprise. States that have passed medical marijuana laws have people living in them who are actually pretty realistic in my mind, or at least less alarmist about cannabis's potential harm. Now, of course, it may have been that way before the medical marijuana law was passed. That's why the medical marijuana law got passed. But I sort of love the idea that, in fact, as folks get familiar with cannabis by living in a medical marijuana state, they realize the sky really isn't falling and that the plant is more of a plus than a minus.
All right. Well, I'm always skeptical of any study that talks about the perception of risk when for so long the propaganda has said, you know, it's going to cause us to grow man boobs, destroy our chromosome. Well, of course we perceive it as less risky now that we've got the truth.
Exactly.
All right, let's get to this study. This is actually just a note of some research that's going to go on in New Zealand. $157,000 being promoted for the study of cannabinoids' effect on brain cancer. What do we know so far about brain cancers in cannabis?
So we've had some pretty compelling data suggesting at least some tumor shrinkage in response to cannabinoids, and, you know, generalizing all the way up to primates. So it really seems like this is a compelling potential use for the plant. And I mean, $157,000 is not a lot as big grants go, but they've got the chance to, you know, basically see if cannabinoids can kill some of these tumor cells in a very controlled condition. And I'm super eager to see these results and incredibly optimistic that we're going to find that cannabis may never become your standard cancer therapy, but it would certainly be a nice adjunct to it.
When I see a dollar figure like $157,000, it doesn't sound like much, although it might be more in New Zealand, I don't know. But is there any comparable brain cancer research going on in the U.S.?
Alas, not a thing. Mm. I mean, so, not even close, so yeah. That's pretty telling.
And is you know of any other countries? Israel, perhaps?
Israel has not been focusing on the brain cancer part per se, and in part I feel like, as you know, as their citizens want, they're going ahead and going with the things where we already have the data and doing much larger sample things. So the PTSD work and the cancer-related chemotherapy, so not as a treatment for cancer so much as an approach to making other cancer treatments more palatable.
We've got another story coming up about the use of cannabis in the treatment of sports injuries. We've spoken about the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. They're the ones that are examining this. And what do you think about the possibilities of this, both from a you know, the clinical standpoint, could it actually help? And from the political standpoint, will it be able to get past these sports leagues?
I mean, it's so harsh to think about this. I was just watching that show with the Arizona Cardinals on Amazon and how these guys are just getting their heads bashed in, you know, week after week after week. And we already have markedly more data than a lot of drugs had to support preventive use, that if they just had some cannabis right there on the sidelines, if they take a knock to the noggin there, it would really, really help a lot. And the downside is incredibly slim. I sound like a total space case when I say this, but I think they would respond better if they'd actually had a chance to habituate to low doses of cannabis throughout the season. So if they did have to take a quick hit off the vaporizer after taking a big spill, it wouldn't impair them very much. But now it sounds like I'm actually saying, hey, maybe people ought to have a little tincture every night while they're playing in the NFL. And that's, unfortunately, I think, the best solution to all this.
Mm, and then, but, you know, it's a shame. We've got something like 20 of the NFL teams play in states that have medical marijuana. And if Missouri and Florida pass their medical marijuana initiatives this year, there'll be 24 of the 32 teams, two thirds of the teams. Or is that three fourths? Math. A lot of the teams will be in states where medical marijuana is legal. The sports leagues are just, the commissioners here are just so far behind the curve. It almost seems like they're even farther behind than the politicians are. Why are these sports leaders and government leaders so far behind the public sentiment?
So this is so sad, but there's that perception that athletes are role models in a way that's just completely inappropriate. And in fact, you know, any of these guys could, you know, have 90 kegs delivered to their houses at any time, and nobody would bat an eye. So why would it actually be such a big deal for something that can actually be helpful? And I think they're all just quaking in their boots about federal legal status. And it just makes me kind of sad that it's really the result of a lack of education.
All right. And our final story here has to do with some controversy over some research that went on in Vermont with respect to marijuana. What's the story on this one?
I mean, the bottom line here is anytime you ask somebody to do a big review of all the cannabis research literature, it's either going to end up being 325 pages long, or it's going to end up being focused on some key issues and potentially biased. And I'm afraid that's pretty much what happened here, so that when they asked folks to go ahead and review this literature, they got the bad news, they got the alarmist statistics, they got less than up-to-date evidence based on studies that have subsequently not replicated. And of course, then it made it look like there's no need for the state to change their laws.
All right. So we'll keep our eye on that and see what happens. And of course, we'll be back next Monday with more on our Cannabis Q&A segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. If you'd like to get your questions handled privately, you can always send them by email. The address is 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. And no classes from Dr. Mitch this fall, but if you're looking for a cannabis-friendly therapist in the Albany, New York area, well, send him that email at 420research@gmail.com. Thanks, Dr. Mitch, and we'll see you next week.
Looking forward to it.
All right, stay tuned, folks. We'll be back with the radical rant on why Hillary Clinton is the I-502 of presidential candidates.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.